The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Junior Joe Santos, 7-0 for Ciryl Gane.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ciryl Bon Gami Gane.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Matt and I, interesting show today. Bruce Buffer makes his return. I love Bruce Buffer.
Yes.
We want to congratulate him on his 25 years in the UFC.
Yes.
Ciryl Gane is making his first appearance. I'm really looking forward to talking to him. We've never interviewed him. And it's the main event this Saturday against Jarzynho Rozenstruik. 7-0 against Jarzynho Rozenstruik, who's 11-1. That one loss to Francis. What a great matchup this is. I can't wait for this fight.
Yeah, and we also have, you know, we have to talk about some of the fights, you know, obviously that just happened.
Amazing, amazing card. We don't have to talk about the picks. It doesn't matter who picked what.
There's so much to talk about. We'll get Bruce in on the action. And I can't wait to ask Bruce, what is his hobby, MMA, unrelated to MMA? I wonder what do you think he's going to say?
Ready? I know what he's going to say.
What?
He counts his money. Bruce Buffer is smart. You know, he's a really smart businessman. He's loaded because he knows how to market. Bruce is a smart guy.
Yes. Well, let's get him in. Let's get Bruce Buffer in here. Yes. And for all things Bruce Buffer. Oh, he hears us.
Bruce, I hear you.
We're on air.
Had to count the Benjamins. What can I tell you?
We were just saying what a great businessman you are. You're very smart with marketing and with, you know, kind of owning your property and your sayings. You're a smart dude, man. You're very good at this.
Oh, thanks, you brother. I really appreciate it, Jim. I haven't seen you for a while. I get to see Matt on the road all the time. I haven't seen your handsome face for a long time.
I know. I said, you know what? Instead of having fun on Fight Island, I'm going to sit in my apartment and get fat. That was what I decided to do. Just shove food in my face. Hopefully I get out to Vegas. I want to get out before the summer and actually go to the fight.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many good events coming up. And listen, I want to thank you. That tweet you made on my 20th anniversary about that. Thank you so much, Jim. That was so sweet.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, you're a great part of the UFC. Like, as a fan of the UFC, I associate you with every great fight I've seen. I mean, your announcement is as big a part of it almost as the event. It's just a part of the fabric of it. So, yeah, congratulations on 25 years, man.
Thanks, brother. Really appreciate it. Sincerely.
Bruce, let me ask you, because you know my ADD, and because it's right behind you, I'm going to be wanting to say it the whole time. Tell me about the James Bond 007 Dr. No poster that's behind you. Explain that to me, please.
Okay, so I'm a big collector of movie memorabilia, and posters are what I mainly collect. I have a lot of vintage posters from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Wow. A few from the 70s, and then I stopped, because that's when they were like artwork. This back here, great, is the original. All my posters are original, either one of a kind or original posters. But this is the original French Dr. No poster of the very first James Bond film, which was Dr. No. I think it was 1961 or 62. And it's the epitome of when you look at Sean Connery, you know, the cigarettes in his hand. Of course, that doesn't really fly today, but the cigarette, the gun, the look, you know, I mean, that's James Bond, you know.
And yes.
I don't know about you guys, but who didn't want to be James Bond when they were a kid, you know?
I love memorabilia and stuff. When you buy something, do you have to love the movie, or is it just like, hey, that's a great poster and it's a piece of like cinema history?
I think it's a combination of the two. Like there's some posters I have where they're just incredible, but the movies weren't that great. Yet they're cult classics. So one of the examples, I have the original Creature from the Black Lagoon, right? Which is, wasn't the greatest movie, but it's a cult classic, right? The monster should be recreated today. Or I've got the original War of the Worlds, or The Day the Earth Stood Still, or Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, where they're punching each other. It's just so cool. So I'd say it's a combination. For the most part, my favorite piece, you ever see It's a Wonderful Life, the Christmas movie?
Sure.
Oh, 100%.
So I have the 7-foot original poster of It's a Wonderful Life, where James Stewart's holding Donna Reed over his head and they're all happy. And it's the epitome of the way I hope my life will be, just total happiness. That's one of my favorite movies and one of my treasure possessions. And if I ever go broke and homeless, I'll be on the street with that under my arm.
don't be like what's his name in the movie on the bridge. You know, hoping he meets an angel. Like Jimmy, I see Jimmy recast
that. That's a wonderful life.
Yes, it's a wonderful life. Just if you lose everything, don't be like George up on the bridge about to jump. It's not worth it.
I took that
in a weird direction. Hey, listen, speaking of you wanting to be James Bond as a kid, it depends on which James Bond. I grew up with the Roger Moore and a little bit of Timothy Dalton, Living Daylights, which wasn't the greatest. But Roger Moore was my James Bond. Which do you resonate most with, Sean Connery? Or
I resonate most with Sean Connery because I was a kid, you know, young kid when those came out. Roger Moore, classy, Roger Moore, you know, the handsome James Bond look. But Roger Moore, for me, during the whole thing, he didn't have the physicality, you know, like Daniel Craig gets in there, he gets it done, right?
Yeah.
Sean Connery and the way that they had violence back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, he got it done too. Roger Moore was a little stiff for me, but he was really good James Bond. He was cheeky
in his humor.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you go back to the original concept of Ian Fleming's what James Bond was supposed to be, the one actor out of all the actors that played James Bond, and Pierce Brosnan was also very good, but Daniel Craig is the epitome of Ian Fleming's original version of what James Bond is supposed to be. He was blonde, he was troubled, you know, the killer inside, the whole bit, a man at battle with himself. And I'd say as far as the original book description, that's what James Bond truly was.
Daniel Craig.
Every time I think of Daniel Craig, though, I think of that first one he was in, or I don't know if it was Casino Royale, whatever it is. He's tied to the chair and the guy's torturing him, like hitting him under the chair and hitting his nuts. He's there. Take that, Daniel Craig. And he's got his hitting him right in the nuts.
I don't know.
It's just that disturbing to me.
But if you
looks like something that it was disturbing for me to watch, but Jimmy might have been slightly aroused during that
scene. Yeah, if it was a woman with a mask, I would be like, yeah, I paid to have that scenario.
There you go. Nothing like a little pain, Jimmy. I got
absolutely. That's why I do this podcast. I like
by the way, the guy that tortured him in that scene is named Mads Mikkelsen. Okay. He's a European actor. If you go on Voodoo, whatever, and go watch a movie called Polar, P-O-L-A-R.
Jimmy, what? Did you hear what Bruce just said?
Yeah, but you said you saw that and didn't like it, Matt.
Don't you fuck with me, Jimmy, in front of Bruce. Bruce, I've been talking about this movie, Polar, for so long. Nobody, it's with Mads, what's his last name?
Mads Mikkelsen.
This movie is so much fun.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Thank you, Bruce. Jimmy.
I've never seen it, no.
That torture scene when he was tortured. Have you ever seen a scene like that?
Brutal. But it was such the action scenes were well done. Even the sex scene, that one, you know what I'm talking about.
Come on, we love the sex scene. Come on, Matt. That beginning was awesome. That was amazing. She was hot.
The sex scene was amazing. And the whole thing was such a great movie. Jimmy, I'm telling you, you could do a lot worse than Pola. I've been saying it forever. Now you get a classy gentleman. He doesn't listen to my picks, Bruce. But now that a classy gentleman like yourself comes on, maybe he'll give it a chance.
I'll trust Bruce Buffer's. I love you, Matt, but I trust Bruce Buffer's musical and movie taste probably a little bit more. His movie taste a little bit more than yours.
Okay.
There you go. Jimmy, do me a favor. Watch this film and let Matt and I know what you think of it. I'm telling you, you'll be glued. Knowing you, Jimmy, know how much you appreciate a fine-looking woman that first 10 minutes, right, Matt? He's going to be glued right after that.
So good, Jimmy.
Hey, do you use museum glass on your posters?
Yes.
Of course.
Absolutely. UV. Like I live near the beach, and the ocean air can ruin collectibles. I collect antique weapons and artifacts. I have a huge sports memorabilia collection, a lot of it in vaults. But what I have here, I got to be careful because the ocean air can like really oxidize stuff. And my old beach house that I had, I experienced that, and one poster got ruined. So I have them specially mounted, covered on yards.
What got ruined? What did you have that got ruined?
It was an old James Cagney poster. One of my favorite actors. When I say ruined, it's like it's still a beautiful poster, but it got affected in the corner. And, you know, collectors, when they look at things, they want everything perfect. And you don't want to redo stuff unless it's by somebody who can really make it look original, because then you're going to ruin the value.
Right.
It's like taking a German Luger and re-bluing it to look good. You just made a $10,000 pistol worth $500, you know?
And, you know, speaking of James Cagney, Jimmy says I do a great James Cagney.
I've said that on many occasions.
Yeah, see?
Oh, that's Edward G. Robinson. That's Edward G. Robinson. Edward G. Robinson.
All right.
Yeah.
I thought that was Cat.
Gonna knock out Frank Trigg, see?
Never do Humphrey Bogart? What's my old Humphrey book? There ain't a dame in the world that don't understand a slap in the face or a slug from a 45.
Now that's a bad.
That's a quote. That,
Jimmy, I wish we had the applause button still.
Yeah.
Now I'm embarrassed with my piece of shit, whatever.
Why? Yeah, Matt, come on. Yours was good too.
What do you mean, Jimmy?
Yours was good too. You both did good impressions.
It was good. Just get right where you're doing, Matt. It's Edward G. Robinson. That's who you
it is.
I was doing the wrong gentleman, Jimmy. Something I don't usually say.
I threw out a movie poster. I should have kept it. They said someone said it was this movie Metropolis. I had like an original one of those and I got rid of it. And other people are like, you should have saved that.
Wait, slow down, Jimmy. I'm going to tell you something, Jimmy. If you had the original Metropolis, which was a silent film, I think 23 or whatever, I'm not quite sure. That is one of the most expensive posters in the world, Jimmy. You're talking about an $800,000 poster.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
If that was original. Yeah. I watch out for that one.
Now, is that the holy grail for you? You know who collects it's weirdly weird, but guy Kirk Hammett, the guitarist from Metallica, is a huge collector of horror stuff. Like he loves old horror posters. And I forget, I think he said that was kind of his holy grail. What is a holy grail for you? Like the one that like you think you could get and want more than anything?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm gonna get up and show you two posters right now that I think okay. So for me, the original would be Frankenstein.
Oh, right? Yeah.
The original Frankenstein would be one. But I'm going to show you here.
Are you a horror movie fan?
A what?
A horror movie
fan. Yes, yes. The movies from the 50s. Can you see this? There's King Kong.
Oh, nice.
Oh, shoot. King Kong.
And that's my favorite sculpture of a boxer there. Hold on 1 second.
It's a nice house, Bruce. I love the posters going up the steps. You got a whole thing going.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you look up the steps, there's It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Oh,
up
that's
there.
Perfect. That's huge, too. Wow, what a big poster.
Hello, movie house.
That's awesome.
Movie house. And then here's the very expensive, the original Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Look at that.
And then here is, if you can see this, that's the House of Frankenstein.
Yes.
Oh, right. Shit. I like that's the one with Abbott and Costello, no?
No, but I have that too, and I'll show you that in a second.
That's a great one.
Frankenstein versus the Wolfman.
You guys got to love this with the punching, the Wolfman.
Yeah. Wow, that's great.
Look at that fight. Look at that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And see, it's always a damsel in distress in the 50s, right?
That's right.
Here's the day the earth stood still.
Look at that.
See the damsel in distress?
This is great. This is beautiful.
They're all beautifully framed, too. Now, it's hard to trust your stuff to somebody. Do you go to just one person?
You remember this guy, Errol Flynn, Jimmy?
Yes, I do. Oh, I've been compared to him.
Errol Flynn?
There you go. Hey, Errol Flynn, he's great. And here's one last one. I'm sorry, I'm having fun with this guy's because I love this shit.
No, I can look at this all day.
I feel like we're doing Cribs.
War of the Worlds.
Wow.
Oh, look at that.
I love the location it's in, too. You got like that little indented area there. That's great.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got it all around here. And then here's your
great house.
Here's your guy, Matt. That's who you're imitating right here.
Oh, let me see. Who am I imitating?
Edward G. Robinson.
Oh, see?
The last gangster.
Do it, Jimmy. Yeah, see?
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
Now, off that and one last one.
Okay.
Okay.
This is one of the greatest movies ever. Story of men. An honor, yet there are criminals. It's called The Wild Bunch.
I don't remember it, but I know the film, but I don't remember seeing it.
The Wild Bunch.
A must-see. A must-see. It changed the whole way Hollywood depicted violence. Unbelievable.
You get them all over the house, Bruce. Like you have, do you go to one person to frame them? Because I'm always nervous as to who to leave your stuff with.
I have a framer that does a great job. I mean, I went through trial and error with a couple of framers, and then as far as where I buy these, there's a emovieposter.com. They have great auctions there. You can trust the originality of them. Or I bought from private collectors. I've been doing this. I'd say the first poster I got was 94. I paid $4,000 for It's a Wonderful Life. I had a choice between Casablanca or It's a Wonderful Life. I don't know why I didn't buy both of them. I made a mistake. But that's one of my very, very first big investment in a poster.
Wow. And it's,
investment-wise, incredible.
Yeah, they go up, right?
Oh, my God. I would say that It's a Wonderful Life. And I don't like talking money, but if we're talking collectibles, I mention it.
Sure.
That's probably a $40,000 poster today.
Oh, tenfold, Scott. Well, yeah, because also the longer it goes, the more likely another one is to get damaged or one is to get lost or, you know, if they haven't found them all.
It's the basic. But here's the thing. In the lower corner of the posters, it'll say like 20 of 232, which means that they only made 232 posters because there wasn't that many movie theaters back then. Right.
Over
20. Where today there's so many of them, although there's some posters worth money. So the classic economic theory of all collectibles is supply and demand. Like right now, I just bought a box of 87 Fleer basketball, which has the second year of Michael Jordan in it, right? Since The Last Dance came out on Showtime or HBO, that special of Michael Jordan was unbelievable. That box used to sell for $4,000 last September. Now it costs $80,000.
Wow. His
rookie cards have gone from like a couple thousand to a PSA grade of 10 card, which just sold for like $180,000. They don't go down. I've been watching this for 30, 40 years, guys. In the time, we're in one of the worst economic times in history, but that's when collectibles actually become more valuable and there's money out there. People have money. They're putting them on eBay and they're selling like this.
You know, it's funny too with cards. Like there was a period in the early 90s where they made cards that would shoot up like a Frank Thomas baseball card. And then they would go down again. It was almost like because everybody was collecting hey, this is a collector. And they would make these cards, they would overvalue them and people would pay a lot of money. And then they would kind of crash into where they belonged, which was not much, but yeah, Jordan's obviously that rookie card is worth having. Like, you know,
well, again, it goes back to supply and demand. The Frank Thomas card, the Upper Deck card they had, I think it went to like $100 at one time. You probably can't sell it for maybe 10 bucks now.
Yeah.
Hendrick Jr.'s car was like 90. It's probably worth 30 now. So those fluctuate. But if you go back to, again, supply and demand, the cards I collect are from the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s.
Right.
And in the 80s, I'm going into the basketball because of what's happening now. Because now hedge fund people in Wall Street is getting into collecting cards. They're actually people that trade. They'll like a Michael Jordan card so expensive, let's say $100,000, but 10 people will go in and invest in it. So they own a piece of it. Now that's where it's going now.
Now, are you going to open that box? And what if the Jordan's not in there?
I used to spend $20 opening up 86 Fleer wax packs, right? The first one I opened, I pulled a beautiful Michael Jordan out of it that today would probably sell for $100,000.
Wow.
I sold it 11 years ago for $1,100, right? But that's what happens. And that pack now, to buy that pack, and I started investing in those two, you got to spend like $6,000-$8,000 to buy that pack. I could have bought the box for $200. It sells for $80,000 now. And the case, I could have bought 3-4 cases for $4,000. They go for, it's amazing, guys, like $1+ million now.
So as an investor, it's funny to listen to too, because like now there's all this talk about cryptocurrency and all this shit. And you can never buy at the lowest and sell at the highest. It just doesn't. But there are things you look back on. You're like, fuck, why didn't I? It was there. I could have.
The problem with crypto, and it's not a problem. I'm not an expert on crypto, so I can't really comment. I bought Bitcoin at 25. It went down to like 8. I finally went up to 20. It was great. I got my money back. I sold it, made a little coin. Now it's at what, 55,000? But it's so volatile. It's just so volatile.
Yeah, it's frightening. I bought some and I know nothing about it, which shows you what an ass I am. I just invest in a few different ones and I'm watching it go up and down. And I'm like, whatever you put in, you got to be willing to lose.
Hey, Jim, when you got as much money as you do, you got to diversify a little bit, right?
That's right. That 50 bucks has to go somewhere. And I'm like, you know what? I'm putting it into crypto.
Bruce, are you a golf player? What do you like to do on a Sunday? I can't picture you staying in your pajamas all day and relaxing. Right.
No.
I could relax.
My relaxation is poker, you know, dinner with friends, my family. I'm all about my family, you know?
Yeah.
A girlfriend and I went for a nice hike yesterday on Sunday. We hiked about 6 miles here in Palos Verdes on the cliffs overlooking the ocean, and, you know, went for a sunset drink and stuff. That's a nice way to spend a Sunday, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to pry. Are you getting serious with this young lady?
We've seen each other for off and on. She's a good friend. Okay. And then, you know me, Matt, I've never been married yet. I always kid. I said, I've almost been divorced twice, but I haven't been married yet. Yeah. But I'm the right one along. I think I'm getting in that mode now. I think we're getting close.
I look at you and I look at the guy right behind you and I see kind of a similar guy.
There's my man.
Shaking, not stirred, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
You can listen. Be cast as the next James Bond.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, whether it's, what can I say? I can't even comment on that one, Matt. I'll take it.
That just makes you, you know, uncomfortable.
Also, one of the other things I love doing is I love training, Matt. I training calms me down. Training relaxes me. I feel like I have been an athlete my whole life. I like to keep it going all the time. And give me a surfboard. Get me in the ocean. That's what I love. Get me in the ocean. Surfing has been it's my favorite sport. I've been surfing when I moved to Malibu at 15 from Philadelphia. It was like culture shock. I never saw blonde girls like that running out of the ocean. The waves I saw once in France, and immediately I just learned how to surf and I never stopped.
How far from the ocean are you now? You said the ocean air. So are you close?
Yeah, it's about a little less than half a mile down. I'm on a cliff overlooking Los Angeles and the ocean's right here.
Oh, that's nice. That's great. So also, now, do you drive to Vegas ever? Or do you fly every time?
No, you know what I'm doing now since COVID, and actually I don't think I'll ever change, is that I drive. I mean, I can hop in the car on a Friday and I'm there in 4 hours. And when you think about the fact the airport's 15 minutes from me, but you know, you got to get there an hour and a half, 2 hours early, and then you got the hour flight and you got to wait for your bags. Well, the whole time I'm there in a car and I'll have my driver drive me or I'll drive myself depending, but let's say he's driving me. I sit in the back and I do work. I sit there and work and, you know, do my thing.
Yeah. And just relax. And I've done that drive once. I did the Arizona from LA once, which I never want to do again. You get to be at all the fights. What a great job you have. I mean, it's, you know, you get the best seat in the house. You know, you have to be there. They have to get you a ticket because you're on the show. What a great gig.
You know, it's a gig that I wake up every day and I kiss the ground that I'm about to walk on because I'm so honored to be the voice of the Octagon. There's 5,000 or more dudes out there waiting, or maybe girls too, that want to do the job, waiting for me to drop dead. And if I do, I want to go, it's tough right there at the Octagon. That'll be perfect. It's either, I want a great white shark to take me out or do it in the Octagon. That way I'll go out in two of the things I love most, right?
This was that fly that attacked you when I was there backstage. That was Abu Dhabi. Well, yeah, with the fly, that was the funniest thing I've ever seen. You didn't see that, Jimmy?
No.
Oh, Dana like retweeted it or put it out on his.
Yeah.
A fly. Now the fly
right by his mouth as he's saying it's time, and it's time. But you know, he finished it because he's a professional.
Of course, he is.
It was coming up, and I could handle it. One time, a bug flew in my mouth in Brazil. We all know how the arenas are down there from time to time, but. They started going in my eye, and that's when I just had to swat it and get it out. I'm now the flyweight champion of Fly Island.
I love it.
Wait, I'm watching it right now as we talk to Bruce. I'm actually.
Oh, you are? I knew you were.
Yeah, I'm seeing it right now. There you go, and I'm trying to see it. Yep, there, there it goes.
It's great.
It's great. Yeah, we have Cyril gone today. Are you doing the you obviously get to choose whatever cards you want, but once in a while they got to give you a week off because again they're doing them every week. So do you always do you pick and choose, or do they go, hey, we'll use you for this one? How does that work?
Well, they know that I want to do every show, you know, I'm just that way.
I do
every show if I can, but I really do appreciate, you know, a week off. But sometimes Joe Martinez, who does a very fine job, represents the brand very well, and I'm content when I watch, like I watch this weekend when I'm not there, because it's important to me that the brand be represented well. Yeah. So, but also, you know, I need a weekend off once in a while. And sometimes when I get a weekend off, though, I don't even take it off. I'll go do a NASCAR race, or I'll do a, you know, March Madness, you know, basketball. I get offers to do different things. And then I might just say, no, you know, I need to just chill. I need to collect myself and be 100% next week for the UFC.
Joe Martinez is good because he's different too. Like, he's not trying to do Bruce Buffer. He has his own style. So it's a different style. I mean, you're my favorite, but I mean, if you're off, at least it's a guy doing his own thing and not trying to do you and doing you poorly, which I would hate to see.
Imitation is the height of flattery, as they say, but yes, he does a fine job. And I do see some of the people out there that try to imitate me, and I guess it gives me a nice LOL. You know, it's really funny, especially when they try to do the physical stuff I do, you know, and do yeah. the I watched one guy one time, he laid down on the mat in the cage and rolled over as he was announcing all over the spit and the blood and everything that's been in there. That was his way of announcing. He literally laid down on the ground and just rolled over while he was announcing. I thought, what the heck? Seriously?
Yeah, that's kind of when you say the spit, like the sweat, like yeah, everything on the mat is.
Imagine what's on that floor after two or three fights.
Yeah. Are you going this weekend? Are you heading out this weekend?
Yeah, I am. I'll be there, and of course, for 259, which is a hell of a show. I can't wait to get there for that.
Yeah.
Get tested for COVID. I'm quarantined for 24 hours to the arena, do the show, and boom, depending on the time we end, I go back Saturday night or Sunday morning, because I'm not going out in Vegas and doing what I love to do, you know, playing poker or blackjack or partying and having fun. It's just not that kind of environment anymore.
Well, yeah. What's a normal thing for you? Because I've seen you out at that, out to dinner after on a Saturday night late at that steakhouse at the MGM. I've seen you before, you know, like 2 years ago. What's a typical weekend for you in Vegas after you're done announcing? What will you go out and do?
Well, the night before the show, I'm kind of a nun. I don't party late. I just get my head together, do my work. I want to be fresh for the show. After the show, it's balls to the wall. Have fun. You know, I love playing poker. But usually after the show, depending who's there at the show with me, love a fine dinner, like when you and I run into each other at the steakhouse, you're with Rogan or whatever the case might be. And I'll hit the steakhouse or the sushi bar. And then if we're at the MGM, my friends that own Hakkasan, I've appeared there many times. So if there's a good DJ there or whatever, I enjoy going up and getting in the booth behind the DJ and just enjoying the music, watching the people partied up. But after that, you know, it's kind of hard to walk around Vegas after a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to get out. I usually get out of the monkey suit, because if I stay in the monkey suit, it's like I'm a target.
Yeah.
But just depends who I'm with. But a good meal with good friends and enjoying and feeling the adrenaline rush I'm still feeling after a show, because it takes me a while to come down.
Sure.
You know, it's like you, Jimmy. You get off stage after a fine performance, right? Are you ready to go to sleep?
Well, they're so rare for me that I might, you know, I just want to enjoy it. But a performance that is average or mediocre, yeah, I'm tired. When I'm finished, I'm ready just to lay down and forget it ever happened. So now you do these. What kind of prep do you do the night before? That's interesting. You said, like, what do you, because your pronunciation is so good. I mean, do you write your own cards up, or do you write things out phonetically, or how do you do it?
Yeah, the cards, I think you might have seen a picture of the cards once in a while. I've actually auctioned off about 21 sets of cards for charity over the last few years. But I have a template of those cards, and I got to fill in the information. And that takes me a couple hours with the prep that I have to do before I get on the road to Vegas. But then when I get into Vegas on Saturday or Friday night, I get the weights, the refs, all that type stuff. So then I have to literally go through everything, put it all in, make sure everything's correct with the final stat sheets that they send me. That takes another hour or two. And then I color the cards. You know, they kind of look like little pieces of art by the time I'm done with them, with yellow and red and blue and all that. And it's not that I'm reading the cards. I think if you watch, I don't really read my cards. You know, I'm always
right.
But sometimes I'll forget how tall a guy is or the record or whatever. And no matter where I'm at, like this, I can just, even upside down or sideways, I've learned how to read my cards. So, because I don't like this. I mean, no offense to other announcers, please. I don't
mean, sure.
But I don't like being stiff like that. I got to move. I got to get into what I'm doing, you know? And the day that I can't physically announce the way I love to announce, that's going to be one of the key reasons why it'd be time for me to announce my retirement.
Is the color coding, so like if the weight, like what the fuck is it? You can just look and say, oh, that's green. Like, is that just to catch your eye as you're talking through it?
Well, I know what's colored. I know exactly the stat that it's covering. So I immediately can draw my eye to it. And then I literally can read it again, upside down, sideways, left or right.
Now, pronunciation, you're a master of pronunciation. Matt and I are not. Now, there's a couple. We say Kamaru Usman, you say Kamaru Usman. Now, do you ask these guys, or how do you know? Because I would tend to side with you over me, of course.
Well, the UFC is a well-oiled machine. They send us like voice clips of the fighters saying their names. But the more important thing, aside from the way they want their name, like Kamaru, he wants it announced that way. Okay. And we get noticed about that. So let's say I'm working with John Attic, who's a master at a pronunciation of the names. And we'll go over the names before, because I want to be in sync with Anik or Bisbing, right? Whoever's commentating that fight, it's very important that we both be in sync and say that name correctly. But there has been times when I've gone to the fighter, especially some of the foreign fighters, to get it down. And the more meat to the name, like Nurmagomedov, give me all that meat. I mean, Frank Trigg, Mike Swick, you know, God love them in their names, and I'm trying to make it sound as much as I can, but it's very hard with single syllable names.
Why are you smiling, Jimmy?
Two reasons. A, and Nurmagomedov, the way he said that, and Frank Trigg, who you both have victories over, which just makes me happy that Bruce
said. They did a fight lore on that.
Yeah, that was a great piece, man. Dana called me up after he saw it. He said, Buff, you got to see this. This is the best piece. Dana gets so excited by that story. It's incredible.
Yeah. I know that if people want to watch, it's on Fight Lore on UFC Fight Pass, and they will talk about the time that Frank Trigg rudely interrupted Bruce Buffer, showed him some disrespect, and got dealt with in an elevator. I'm leaving a cliffhanger right there for people to check out on Fight Lore on Fight Pass. See what I do, Bruce?
You did it. You did it. It was cool they got Frank on there to talk about it, too. That was very cool.
Yeah, he's a humble guy.
No, I get along great with Frank, so except at certain moments in an elevator, that's all.
Yeah, hey, listen, it's like that sometimes.
No, I say throw a few and have a beer afterwards. That's the way I like it.
Yeah. And what are you promoting too? But we want to now, are you on Cameo? We want to, before we let you go, we want to make sure we get the proper plugs out and promote everything. I know you, the It's Time is your podcast, which I think you're still doing, right?
Oh yeah. The It's Time podcast. I've got a YouTube channel. I just put it back on video. We're getting a ton of people listening on audio, but I started my video channel. So The It's Time podcast, I had Bisbing on the other week, Pearl Gonzalez, Luis Pena. But I take people from movies and different walks of life. This Wednesday, I have Dan from Memory Lane, and we're going to be talking about and showing the sports memorabilia that you and I were just talking about, right?
Oh.
I dedicate my show to sports memorabilia on Wednesday. But I'm where everywhere you can hear podcasts, and of course, my YouTube channel. And I would like people to subscribe, because once we get to the 5,000 plus subscribers, I'm going to be giving away some pretty cool stuff to the listeners. You know,
another
point. The cameos, I do a ton of. I got six to film after this interview just for today.
You do.
Cameos. But the big thing is that my website at brucebuffer.com, I do these championship introductions that I charge very, what I consider little for, but I give a lot of money to children, military, and animal charities. And we're inundated with orders like that. I've got 2 hours of videos to film today.
Wow.
Birth of babies, weddings, birthdays, and then the big championship introduction where I introduce the fan as if you're being introduced by me in the red corner in the octagon, right? And I started this 2 years ago as a Christmas thing, and I was going to stop it, but my partner Kristen and I got so many thank you notes, and it actually started bringing tears to our eyes how happy we were making everybody. So I've never stopped it. I mean, it's a lot of work, but I'll. And then my big thing is, there's two things I'll share with you. Matt, this is all about you, baby. This is all about.
Oh, reefer? Oh.
lifts for shoes?
Hunter's chance. Oh, Jimmy.
Hunter's chance. This is my new bourbon I came out with last year. We're breaking records in the United States. We got a 9.5 taste rating from the taste board, which is unheard of. It's the highest rated bourbon. It's for sale. We're coming into New York soon. It's in 16 states now. And we're setting a record, and we're going to have a very big year this year. The reception, the critics, reviews, everything. But this is all about having that one punch that can change your life. And Matt, the night you fought George St. Pierre, if that wasn't what this is all about, I don't know what was. Okay.
I had a puncher's chance.
Puncher's chance. Very nice. What a great bottle.
This bourbon is made with heart and honor for those who know how far they've come, for those that started early, stayed late, day after day, year after year, for those who have the courage and strength to do what others won't.
Bruce, that's can I ask you something, Bruce? Okay, it's just something between us. I don't want to make Jimmy feel weird, but is it for some people that don't have the heart of a lion or a puncher's chance?
Of course. If you enjoy drinking, I'll have a bottle sent to Jimmy in a heartbeat. Don't worry.
Maybe I'm only fucking around.
No, I don't have, but I've drank something called Slapper's Chance because I'll slap somebody.
Hey, you guys enjoy bourbon? Do you enjoy bourbon?
I don't drink at all. I don't drink at all.
Matt, do you drink?
Do I drink? I have some of my Ciro's Grappa.
Matt drinks.
That's the Italian in you, Matt.
There's no preservatives. He does it right in the garage, and I throw it to the back of my throat. Ooh, I like that.
Very cool.
You know, and don't look at me funny, but I've been having some of those German beers that are like grapefruit beers.
Oh, the wheat beers and stuff?
It's not wheat. It's either grapefruit or pomegranate. It's not exactly a wine cooler. It's a beer. Jimmy.
Have some of Bruce's liquor. I want you to drink some of Bruce's and come on the air. I want to see you after having one or two, a couple of shots of Puncher's Chance.
Are you guys in the same studio or separate?
Right now we're separate. Normally the same, but because of COVID, we're both home.
Oh, I got you. Well, you know, just listen, if you want me to send you a bottle, send me an address and you'll have it next week.
Oh, Matt, you have to. Then do a shot on the air.
I'll do that. I'll
try a shot on the air. I'd love to send it to you, Matt.
Yeah.
No, I'll get you my address for sure.
Send me your address. Now you're going to be able, I think you're going to like this one, guys. And I'm a little early in showing this to you, but it's coming out in a month or two.
What is this?
I have a big company in England. I'm distributing a line of It's Time toiletries all over the world.
Toiletries?
Facial soap, body wash, deodorant, moisturizer. I've always
Bruce been very Buffer big teepee?
Pardon me?
Bruce Buffer teepee for my bunghole?
Here, I'll show you in a second.
Sorry, that's from Beavis and Butthead. Sorry about that. Bruce, why does Bruce have to deal? Look at this beautiful. Keep going. Oh, it's time.
Awesome.
In your ass.
This is the cool.
It's time to powder your nose.
So, Jimmy, you're going to be able to smell like Buff. Okay, we got the
cool. Those are nice.
Yeah. Jimmy, you want to smell like Buff?
I do. Those are actually really nice. The bottling is great. The way you're marketing them is beautiful.
Yeah, I put like the little microphone top. It's my signature's on the top and on the bottom.
Awesome.
Should come up with a brand to just, I think you should go full fledged and go full forward and go against Manscaped. And it's time for the Bruce Buffer ball cleaner. Yes, I'm sensing the future. Fuck, listen, I love Manscaped. Not fucking. Yeah, they're
fine product.
They've been good to us. But I'm for the Bruce Buffer. If I got to get my balls cleaned, I would go with the Bruce Buffer brand. Because I can tell. So you drop your pants, it's probably like two shiny walnuts of joy. Probably glowing. Like when you look in the Pulp Fiction case, it's just glowing.
I might be a little uncomfortable with the association of the balls, but you know, it's...
Hey, let's stop. Let's stop before I get me too'd by Bruce Buffer.
Hey, listen, manscaping is important. I mean, I was doing that in my 20s before even anybody even thought about it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Shit.
You're a porno watcher, Jimmy. You remember what the porn was like in the 80s versus today? It was hair everywhere, right?
I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
The hairier, the better.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
Lando's like Indiana Jones down there trying to find something. Lando's like, I go down there with a machete. Lando goes down there. Anyway, guys, Bruce Buffer. Cameo, what else?
Just go to brucebuffer.com. It's all right. Do me a favor, your fans are going to plug one more thing. Check me out on Instagram at brucebufferUFC because I make a lot of these announcements there. And when I start giving away stuff for the podcast, I'd love for people to know because I'm going to give away some pretty cool stuff.
All right.
God,
awesome, Bruce.
I love watching your show. I love how your show's evolved over the last few years or whatever it's been. You guys do such a great job.
Thanks, buddy.
Jimmy, you might think I'm being strange, but I know Bruce for so long.
Oh, I know.
Like 2001. So I know he doesn't judge me. So I can be silly with Bruce. He doesn't.
Of course.
Okay.
Bruce, look, we look forward to watching you again. We love you. You know that. And congratulations, man. 25 years. It's really amazing.
Thanks very much. I don't know if I have another 25 years on this earth, but I do have another 10 or so in the octagon. So I'll do the best.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, buddy. See you soon. All right.
Yeah, Bruce.
Cheers. Thank you. Big cheers. No fears forever. Thank you so much. Love you guys.
All right, pal. Stay healthy. Be good, Bruce.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Yeah, those products look really good, man. Like the way he's such a smart marketer. Like when you look at the way the It's Time products look, it's like, yeah, that's a nice, even if you're not a UFC fan, you look at that and go, yeah, it's a nice fucking product. I'll buy that. Yeah.
Watch what he comes out with next now. I planted a little seed in that head of his.
I know.
You watch the next line of stuff he comes out with.
Yeah.
Everything yeah. for the taint everywhere. It's going to be everywhere. It's going to be nice and clean down there. You know,
and we have Ciryl Gane coming soon. I'm not sure what time he's coming. I'm guessing it will be shortly, but we should talk about the other fights.
Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
I know you want to talk about Derek Lewis versus Curtis Blaydes, and we shall.
We can. We don't have to. I mean, it went the way you thought it was going to go.
It's technically our job. Yeah. We really have to talk about it.
Yep.
But what about Bruce liking Polar? And I've been telling you that forever. But anyway.
I know.
Casey O'Neill. I want to talk about this. Congrats to our friend Jared Gordon.
Yes.
In the prelim. He's won a very smart fight versus Danny Chavez. And he's getting smarter and he looks like he's really just he's getting better and better in there. I'm happy for Jared. Casey O'Neill is her first time in the UFC. She defeated Shana Dobson from the mount, from just second round TKO for mount, where the ref had to come in. That fight from start to finish had me, Jimmy, just like this. Like, oh no. Oh, gee. Oh, boy. That was me the whole fight. I love that fight.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now, this Casey O'Neill, this Scottish girl from Australia, is going to be, I'm telling you, she's going to be making waves, that girl. I thought she was amazing. I liked everything about her. I liked her striking. I liked her counter striking. I liked her flow, her wrestling from flowing from one. She knows how to commit and then when to flow to the next move, not to overcommit. That, you know what I mean? Not the force. I was so improved. I was so impressed with her positional jujitsu. It was so smart the way she fought on the floor that I just cannot wait to see what's next. Because I'll tell you, Shana Dobson was not making it easy for her. That was a dogfight. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I enjoyed it to the first round when Casey got up and she let out a little like war cry, a little whoa. It was fun, Jimmy. I can't say enough about that fight.
Yeah, it was a great fight. And I think, is she undefeated? Trying to find, my memory is so bad.
6-0 now. She was like 5-0. I'm pretty sure, but I might be off.
I think you're correct. I think you're right. But again, my memory is so shit sometimes. We're getting a little note. Look at this. Ciryl Gane is ready to go. Before we get to Ciryl, we should get to him in just a moment. Well, actually, we can get to him now and then talk about the other fights.
Yes.
After. Yeah. We don't have to talk about whose picks were what. It's not important. I mean, what are we going to brag? There was one decision I absolutely disagreed with. All right, let's get Ciryl Gane in here. How are you?
I'm fine. Fine and you?
Very well. How is your, is this your first UFC main event?
Yes, it's my first UFC main event, of course.
And when did you find out that you were going to go from the co-main to the main?
A few weeks. Well, one month.
About a month ago. So you had time to prepare for 5 rounds and not 3.
Yes. That's not the problem because my conditioning trainer are really good to adapt and he keep always me in the shape, you understand?
Ciryl, where did we grow up for the audience at home so they know? Where did you grow up? I noticed your accent. Where are you from?
I'm from France. I was born in France. I was born in the little city in France. But yes, my father from the Caribbean.
Of okay, and what city in France?
Just close to Nantes.
Oh, okay. Now, when you were a kid, did you did you fight a lot when you were a kid? Did you play other sports?
Yes, of course. I started with soccer when I was really young, and after when I was an adolescent, I played basketball.
Okay.
And there are 5 or 6 years ago, I started with the Muay Thai. And after only 3 years of Muay Thai, so there are 3 years ago, I started training in MMA.
I'm not surprised you played soccer, because that left kick to the body you throw and beautiful knees. I'm not surprised that you played soccer. That left kick, you're
one
of the most
head kick too.
Yeah, you're one of the most athletic heavyweights, but for thank sure.
You. Thank you, thank you. Yes. I think all of that participate of that. You understand?
It all kind of goes into it. Yeah, and you seem very comfortable on the ground. You seem like you enjoy going to the ground. You don't really seem to care where the fight is, standing up or on the floor.
Yeah, no matter, because I'm a fast learner and think I'm a fast learner. So I'm really comfortable to the ground too. I'm really comfortable with my striking, with my wrestling. So yeah.
Now, when you started doing, after the Muay Thai, you started working your jiu-jitsu. How did you take to jiu-jitsu? You said you're a quick learner. Were you quick to learn the jiu-jitsu like you were the Muay Thai, or not so much?
No, when I started the MMA, it was the real problem.
Yeah?
I started training with Nassourdin Imavov.
Oh.
A really good striker, but also a really good wrestler in the grand game. And I was really, frustrated, exactly. I was really frustrated for my first training. But keep calm and go to stay focused. And yes, I learned it.
But you beat your seven wins, your three wins, one by decision over Tanner Bozer, but three submissions, three TKOs. It's a really good combination of there's no, some guys, people know what they're going to do. But with you, there's really, you seem comfortable everywhere.
Yes, exactly. I want to be this kind of fighter. I want to be a polyvalent fighter like some guys like John Jones or some goat like that, yeah, you know?
And you're fighting Rosenstrike, who's a very good a kickboxer. He's great, strong legs, very powerful kicker. Is he the most dangerous kicker that you think you fought?
Yes, I think it's the biggest test of my career. And but I'm all right. I'm all right because I have something. You know, I can manage my opponent, and this is the keys of my problem.
Did you watch Derek Lewis versus Curtis Blades?
Curtis Blades, yeah. Unbelievable! Wow. Yeah. I saw that. That's really crazy. That's really, really, really.
The uppercut. Yeah.
Yeah, this uppercut was, but we knew he wanted to do that.
Yes.
He just stay on his feet and he waited. Boom. That's, whoa.
Derek Lewis is an athletic heavyweight too. People don't think that he's as athletic as he is, but he's very fast. He moves really well for a very big guy.
Yeah. And I think it's smart. He don't have a lot of skills, but I think it's a smart guy. Really?
Yeah, like he timed that takedown. Like he knew what Curtis Blades was going to do.
Yes.
And I guess he just read something, because that was a perfectly thrown.
He won.
Yeah.
Your last fight, you TKO'd in the second round the former champion, Junior Dos Santos. That must have really been something else for you. How was that being a former champion?
This is really mean something for me and for my coach, for my fan too. Big experience and we finished the fight before the end of the fight and we managed the fight well. So yes, I was really happy.
We got, you know, Stipe versus Francis coming up with that rematch that everybody's so excited about, and us included. Do you think Francis has improved enough since their first time they met to get the victory?
I don't know exactly, because his last fight against Jairzinho, he did the same. You understand? So I think Francis can win for real. He should win if he learned his last fight with Stipe, but I don't know. We will see.
Yeah, I watched the Rosenstrike fight again, and Jairzinho threw a very heavy leg kick, and Francis just came forward. You know, he just came forward. I guess he kind of caught him going back. But that might have been, it looked like Jairzinho was a little bit off balance. I couldn't tell if he hit him with that overhand right or if he kind of just fell back trying to get out of the way. But you don't seem to care who you fight. Like every time they ask you who you want to fight, you say anyone, in any way? You're like, you don't care.
I really don't care. I really don't care, but for my management, that's really important to grow up. So yes, sometime he told me, yes, ask this guy, but that's not really me. That's not really me. I just want to do my job in the cage. I want to do well, and I want to do a real show for the fan, and that's it. That's it.
Well, you really will have your choice of who to fight. If this fight goes your way, and again, Rozenstruik is very, very tough, but I mean, I would love to see you against Alistair Overeem or Volkov or Derek Lewis. There's so many interesting fights, or even Curtis Blaydes. There's so many great fights ahead for you. You know, you must be very, very happy on how fast you've risen up in the ranks too.
Yes. We will see after this fight. But I think if I will win this fight, I'm really tied to the top, to the title, or maybe something like that, you know? If I win this next fight, I stay undefeated, and I think I can hack something. I can wait for something.
Okay, so you're saying if you win this fight, and if it's a very, very decisive win, a strong win, you may wait around and see what happens with Miocic and Francis.
Yes, exactly. We will see, and I know they have John Jones in the equation, so we will see.
Oh, didn't Dana say that John Jones was getting the winner of Ngannou Miocic? I thought he did say that, but maybe it's not a done deal yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly, but yes, I heard that too.
Yeah, if they were going to put John against the winner, I'm not really sure. Now, do you know Francis?
Yes. My former partner. Yeah, but not like because when I arrived in the MMA factory, my actual gym, Francis left.
Yes.
To Vegas already, you understand?
Okay.
So I met him just a few times when against Overeem for his camp, for Overeem, for Curtis Blaydes. Yeah. And I don't know who exactly. So, yes, we sparred.
You worked with each other?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's very interesting. Mm. Okay, so you got to feel him. You know what it's like to move with him.
Yes. And he have a real power.
Yeah,
he does. Yeah.
Haven't seen that.
But so do you. I mean, so do you. I mean, and you're ferocious, and you must have been happy because you were knocking guys out or submitting them. But you must have loved that Tanner Boser fight because you went the distance and you won a decision, and it must make you feel a little more confident that you know your gas tank can take you through, and you can win a decision as well if you have to.
Yes, of course, I'm agree with you. For the specialist of the MMA, it's a real great fight. But for the fan, something he asked more, you understand? But yeah, for me, I love this fight, really, because I managed the fight and I was a little bit tired because I from for no excuse, but yes, we did well.
Well, look, we're looking forward to this fight. Again, you two really, you're 7-0, he's 11-1. You both have these incredible records. You both have the ability to knock each other out very quickly. So, good luck, and really, we'd love to talk to you again, and we're going to look forward to watching you rise through the heavyweight division.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
He speaks English better than, like, it's got to be hard, like, when you're in a, you know, you learn a second language and you have to go out and do press. Like, that's got to be a difficult, I can't comprehend that. I'm so bad in foreign languages. I just can't, my mind doesn't work that way.
I like him because he was very smiley.
Yeah, he was a nice guy.
Let me tell you, I liked hearing Derek Lewis's thoughts after the fight. As far, what about him saying that's Herb Dean's fault? Like, in other words, with those extra shots on the floor?
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I hated those. I understand. You have to, that ref's got to jump right in there because it is a do or die thing, whether you think the guy's sticking out or not. I'll tell you.
He was stiff, though.
Timed uppercut. He's funny, Derek. He's so much, he has a better fight IQ than people think. People think sometimes he's a meathead or something, or think he's just gonna knock you out, or he's going to lose. Or he was saying he didn't want to even try to do any kind of straight rights or one twos, left rights. He was just thinking of the knee or the uppercut the whole time. And if you now Curtis is not a little guy, he was working his leg kicks, he was working his punches, but you noticed he was striking with just the intention of disguising the shot. So instead of just committing on, if he commits on blasting him with a right hand, and again, everything in hindsight's 20/20.
Sure.
But when he's thinking, nobody's punch proof. You're thinking he's thinking to shoot. Like Derek was just waiting. Right. So you saw, like, man, he's out striking him, doing excellent, but you know he's waiting to shoot. Why not unload with a right hand after faking a shot? Right in his face. If worse comes to worse, you're going to get a clinch. You know? So I don't know. Hindsight's 20/20. He knocked out Junior Dos Santos. He has heavy hands. So if Curtis commits more to his striking, it will set up the takedowns even better. And I think that could have made a huge difference in this fight. You know, but again, like we said, hindsight's 20/20. But props to Derek Lewis, man. I thought the Overeem was a weird call out. I mean, instead of saying, hey, man, I'll wait for the title. I just took out number two guy.
Yeah.
Let me see what happens with Stipe and Francis. Let me take the winner of those guys. And instead, he's like, I want to fight Overeem. Overeem's coming off a loss. Like, that's funny with Derek Lewis.
Well, Derek Lewis, too, is interesting because he goes, man, I just couldn't. He's so honest. He's like, I couldn't get moving, like, even in warm-ups. Because I'm watching him. I'm going, he looks sluggish. Like, he just looked a little bit, like, tired or not moving as well. And he confirmed that. He said he couldn't get his energy going, I guess, even in warm-up. And now Curtis Blaydes hears that, and he must go, fuck. Like, I imagine, you know, putting him on the ground would have probably been a really smart thing to do if possible.
I think he wanted to get there.
And yeah, easier said than done, right?
He did get to try to go for the clinch. He ate an uppercut from hell.
Boy, did he. Yeah,
that was a rough one. I know the fight that you're not agreeing with the co-main event decision.
I'm not. I mean, look, we both picked Lewis to win in the third round, but I mean, it was obviously the second round.
Yes.
For our picks.
Hold on. You being a wise guy?
No.
I picked Blaydes to win.
Oh, let's forget. Let's just cut this out of the reap. We don't need to. It doesn't matter.
You're a wise guy. Jimmy, the co-main, you didn't agree with that decision, did you?
No, I thought it was a 29-28. I mean, come on. It was, Kuniskaya was, I know that she would drop some hard punches and elbows in the last 20 seconds.
She's not on top, Jimmy. It was 17 seconds left when she started striking. So he controlled her that whole round.
The whole round. Although the problem was Vieira wasn't really doing any total. I mean, she was fighting for position and stuff. She wasn't doing a whole lot of damage, but I still think she won that round. I absolutely think that was a 29-28 victory for Ketlin Vieira. That was just how I saw it. It was a bad call.
I do give Yana
Kunitskaya, Kunitskaya.
I do give her a lot of props, but she never stopped trying. That made a difference.
It made a difference, yeah.
At least in the judges' eyes. They might have just said for Octagon control and everything, I really thought Caitlin won that last round. But yeah, she did get on top. In 17 seconds, she did more damage the whole time, than Caitlin did the whole time. But Caitlin almost gets penalized or from losing that. She went for an arm lock with less than 20 seconds left, right, which is ballsy, but it cost her the fight. Listen, yeah, if she got the arm lock, then, she's the hero. So that's the risk, risk versus reward. And it did not pay off in her favor with this time.
Well,
but our favorite now, with the on top, how Yana was doing when she did get on top, you put that together with Caitlin Vera's jiu-jitsu, you know what you get?
What?
Casey O'Neill.
Yeah.
Casey O'Neill. You know what you get when you blend them together, the striking and the jiu-jitsu? Casey O'Neill.
Yep.
You said it the same time as me. You like you were thinking what I was thinking.
I was.
Jimmy, she was great, that Casey O'Neill. I can't see it again. I liked everything about that girl in that octagon.
I know.
That's what you want to see at a first time in there. I was impressed. You don't hear me talk like this.
No, I know. And I like whenever you are take note of somebody, obviously, usually you make the right move. So
we're going to bring this up, archive this, because I'll tell you right now, that girl's got a bright future. All right. Derek Minor. Minor. Derek.
Over. Over Charles Rosa. We both got that one wrong.
He was on point, Derek.
Oof. It was good.
He was on point. He put everything together, and kind of like with Charles Rosa with the Bryce Mitchell fight, it was a game of catch up. Like, in other words, he could try to just reclaim some position, but then still be a couple of steps behind. So it was a hard time. Yo, Olenek, that was a rough one, man. Because sometimes he could just weather the storm.
Yeah.
But Chris Daukaus,
big Philly cop. He's a big fucking cop in Philly. Who the fuck wants to get... Who fucks with that guy when he's walking the beat?
He beat my brother-in-law, Edwin.
He did. I didn't know that.
Edwin up. Or he beat him. I don't know if he beat him up, but I forgot the fact. Yeah. I think Edwin said, yeah, he beat him or something.
Okay.
I might have that wrong, but I'm pretty sure I have that right.
Yeah, maybe they fought in Atlantic City, right? He's a Philly guy. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they
fought. But let's see what else we got.
We both got that one wrong. Yeah.
I do like Chris. I think Chris is great.
Yeah, we both got that one wrong.
Versus
Oh, wait, hold on a second. Yeah. Oh, you said Olenek first round two submission.
I did say that.
Yeah. I forget what I said. I don't remember. It's not important.
You picked first round stoppage. So you got it. You hit it on the money.
It's not worth it. I feel bad.
And bragging about it.
No, it's not worth it.
Well, that ship has sailed.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that. Let's get right to Phil Hawes, who was rocked at a couple. He looked like he was hurt. Nazarudin Imavov, he did beat him in a majority decision. It was a very good fight. That was a really good fight.
You know what I like? I like that the fact when he didn't get him out of there right away.
Right.
He kept composure, and he really blended in his takedowns well. Yes, he got rocked.
Yep.
And that's what a lot of people are going to take out of this, which they really should take out of this, how he put his skill set together. Because before that, he's knocking people out in how many seconds? And he's shown that he's more than just a one-trick pony. Okay, I'm not getting him out here early. I'm not just going to keep my foot on the gas and get burnt out with my huge biceps. I'm going to chill out, and I'm going to time my takedowns, and I'm going to fight intelligently. And that's what he did. So I was impressed with that. I took more away with how intelligently he fought than him getting rocked. Because even when he got rocked, he still won that round.
Yeah. And, again, and that's why I kind of asked Cyril about beating Tanner Bozer, because sometimes these decisions, like, you don't get the fast knockout. And then it's like, all right, now what do you do when you're in the second round and you're getting rocked a little bit, or you're not, you know. And a guy's got to be able to win a decision. I mean, we all know that, but.
You know who wants to know nothing about a decision? Doesn't even want to say the word decision?
Tom Aspinall.
Yes,
Tom Aspinall. But you picked Arlovski in a decision, so you thought it was going three rounds.
Well, you're just being like a bully to me.
No, I got it wrong, too.
I'm not going to be bullied.
I apologize. I'm not trying to brag. We both got it wrong. I got it wrong as well.
I can't stay mad at you.
Okay, thanks. What actually happened in that fight?
He doesn't move like a light heavyweight or a heavyweight. What weight is he?
He's a heavyweight. Yeah.
He doesn't move like he moves like a freaking middleweight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I took Aspinall second round stoppage. I know. There it was.
Was it the second? It was the first
second round. Yeah. I was masterful this week.
You're like a little Notre Dame on this call. You should wear like a hat and you'd be like a little wizard.
And I got Ketlin Vieira right. Even though the judges said it, I was still right about that. I don't give a shit. I was wrong about the method, but she won that fight as far as I'm concerned.
Who did?
Ketlin Vieira. Even though I don't care what the judges said.
She lost that fight.
I don't care what they said. I had her. Well, I had her winning.
Well, I'm going to, on her record, it says she lost.
Yeah, we'll appeal.
I'll tell you, I give Yana some credit though, man.
Of course. She was great.
She got on top. She's like 16 seconds. That's all I need.
Yeah.
Eat my elbow. You know?
It was great. And Derek, you know, the way the fight is stopped, like Lewis blaming it on, I mean, I didn't like, I thought Curtis Blaydes was stiff when he fell. But again, you look at Rosen's strike against Alistair Overeem, down basically 5 rounds to none, drops him and only wins because the referee buys his walking away with his arms up. Like literally, if the ref, if he didn't walk away like that, you know, that fight, Overeem would have probably won that fight.
No, we talked about that. No, yeah. It's true. Jared Gordon, we talked about how happy we are for Jared. He beat a very clean Danny Chavez.
Yeah.
Unanimous decision. Also, Eddie Wineland was looking excellent. Very fast hands. He almost does like the old J.R. Sullivan. He's moving his hands around and he's looked fast. He looked, I liked how he was looking. He was really looking like he was rebounding nicely from his loss to Sugar Sean O'Malley. But then John Castaneda said, not up in here. He capitalized. He knew he was on working the outside of that cage, and Eddie Wineland was stalking him, controlling the center of the cage, stalking him the whole time. And the patience of John Castaneda was great, because the second he landed on Eddie and he seen that he got him a little wobbly, oh boy, that's when he was, that's like when you like in a video game and you press the special button with all like the special combo attack. That's when he was just like, ah, charged him and he punched him like fucking 8 more times. Sorry, I could have said that more technically.
That's okay.
But he just stayed on him when he got him hurt, like a shark that's seen blood or smelt blood, whatever the fuck a shark does. And he just got him out of there and just brilliantly. So hats off to John Castaneda. I thought he handled Eddie Wineland it looked like he was having a great night, Eddie.
Yeah.
But, you know, man, he was having a great round, but then he got caught. So that was something else. What else? Anybody else you want to add?
I'll just say this. Before the next week, Matt, please watch the Casey O'Neill fight. I want to get your take on that, so, at least by Wednesday.
You want me to talk more about that?
No, I'm joking. I know you love that. I know you love that fight.
That girl's great. Yeah, I like when somebody comes out like, dude, that was a man, because Shanna Dobson was not backing down an inch. Like she was just saying, no, I'm not accepting a loss. I'm coming back. I'm going to knee you in the belly. And I'm going to, there was so many times during that, I was going, ooh, ow, ooh. It was a battle, man. But nobody was backing down. But Casey O'Neill, I was very, very impressed with everything about her. And I enjoyed her. I enjoyed her attitude in there, too.
Yeah.
I liked it after that first round when she got up and she sat down with a leg lock at the end. It was beautiful. I don't know. Who knows if she would have got it if the time went a little longer. And then she got up and after witnessing that, I wanted to take a big exhale. I was like, whoa, and everything that just went down in that first round. Hell of a round. And then she let out like a little, like a woo. And it was like, man, I had the goosebumps, Jimmy.
Yeah, you love it.
I do love it. I really do love it, you know. But all right, Jimmy. And again, Faraz Zahabi's brother, Ayman Zahabi, took out Draco Rodriguez in the first round. And boy, did he do that handedly, Jimmy. He's looking good, this Zahabi.
Yeah.
So funny that he's the brother of Faraz. Faraz is
his record.
People that don't know, Faraz Zahabi is George St. Pierre's longtime coach and friend and a brilliant martial artist. I'm throwing that word around today. But
it's okay. I mean, he's 2-2 in the UFC and he's 8-2 overall.
Want to mention the first fight of the night, the heavyweights, and then we're good.
Sergey Spivak against Jared Vandara. Yeah, it's very hard for me to see. My eyes are going. Second round, TK.
Spivak's grappling, man. He was on him. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I like to him. Jimmy, great night of fights.
Amazing night of fights. Again, decisions are great too. But I mean, every fight was a TKO or a knockout in the prelims. And I love that because I always think it's great because then it motivates people to watch the prelims. I always think the prelims don't get what they should deserve from the, because it's like their brother, the prelims, people just go to the main card. But a lot of those prelim fights Those are fights to get you interested, especially in a pay-per-view that's coming up. This wasn't a pay-per-view. So watch the prelims. They're great fights.
Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
Perfect example. Did you see the Casey O'Neill fight versus Shannon Dobson?
I didn't know. Was it a good fight?
Jimmy.
Oh.
I'll tell you right now, in a night of very, very good fights, of a lot of a bunch of stoppages the heavyweight and the main event delivered. My favorite fight of the night is that Casey O'Neill fight. That's how much I enjoyed that fight.
Yeah.
So, hey, man, that's my two cents.
That's right.
So I think that's how we're going to end this show from now on. You're going to say something. I'm going to go, well, that's my two cents.
All right. And the fact that I picked three fights exactly is a lot of them want to discuss it. All right. Let's it doesn't matter.
What are you going to say when I go, well, that's my two cents? And what are you going to say? You're going to have a cool catchphrase also. I don't think I'm going to say the two cents thing. I might.
Okay, say it.
All right. Well, first of all, why don't you give a plug first? So
New Chip Chipperson podcast is up. Hopefully Matt will do it soon. It's a really funny one with Anthony and Bob Kelly, Rich Voss. Go to chipchipperson.com. YouTube/ChipChipperson.
Yeah, I'm on Cameo, Matt Serra.
Yep,
Matt Serra BJJ on Instagram, yada, yada. Also, Jimmy, listen, this was a great show. And hey, man, that was my two cents. Nah.
Penny for your thoughts.
Bye, everybody.
See you. See you Wednesday.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.